Good morning, Your Honors. Lydia Kaiser on behalf of Petitioner Shi Chen, and with me is my colleague, Mr. Alan Devlin. May it please the Court, Counsel. BIA failed to find Petitioner a refugee based on its prediction of how this Court would rule and interpret a question of law. Specifically, the BIA speculated that this Court would not follow the Ninth or Second Circuits in finding that parents' resistance to a coercive population control policy could, in appropriate circumstances, be imputed to their child.
Let me ask you something right away, Ms. Kaiser, because we don't have much time. You are proposing, if I'm understanding you right, two different social groups that he's Mr. Chen or she?
He's Shi Chen, either one. Chen, she.
All right, the surname is probably Chen. All right.
It is.
You're proposing two different groups. One, his family, and through that, the persecution that his family has suffered because of their resistance as a group to the population control policies. And second, and although I've been told how to pronounce this, I've suddenly forgotten, the Heihaizi,
yes.
His membership in that group. Now, focusing on the Heihaizi, what evidence is there in the record? You cite to some things, but I guess I'm asking, what's the quality of the evidence to show that as a member of that group, he is himself not entitled to have even the one child that China normally permits?
Well, there's ample evidence in the record. I don't have a list of it all here, but we submitted articles, scholarly articles on it. We submitted country reports. We submitted specifically an article on the WHOCO, and this was a 2003 article, where it clearly states that the WHOCO is the passport to rights, and if you are not able to be registered on the WHOCO, you are denied the right to obtain a permit to legally marry.
But the BIA said that he was able to get an identification card. Are we talking about some rights you get and some you don't? Because his parents did pay to get him on the back page or something.
Right. In his village, you had to pay a birth fine. And once you paid the birth fine, you got a receipt, which indicated that you paid the fine, and then they put your name on the back of the WHOCO. And with that, in his local area, he could obtain minimal rights, such as he could go to elementary school and junior high school so long as he paid the tuition.
Which others didn't have to pay.
He could also obtain an identity card with that when he was a child. However, he could not, and this is clearly in the record, attend high school, because when he went over to the big city where the high school was, they would not allow, even if he could have afforded the tuition, to register for school because he was not on the WHOCO. He just had a receipt and his name on the back.
I have been wondering about this. Are you aware of any changes in the Attorney General's official position on any of the issues presented here? In other words, has the new administration addressed whether a spouse or other family member can claim persecution as a result of the forced sterilization of a spouse or parent? And do you think it would be helpful to ask the Department of Justice to submit additional briefing on some of these issues?
I certainly think additional briefing would be welcome, but I would say that the current state of the law would, in fact, permit imputation of political opinion in this case. We are not asking for a per se rule for this individual. We are simply asking that the BIA consider the persecution of his family as the result of their resistance to the coercive population policies as relevant in determining whether he has a well-founded fear. In the Zhang case, the Ninth Circuit observed, just because a child of parents who have been forcibly sterilized is not per se eligible for asylum, does not mean that the fact of sterilization is not relevant. Any child who has experienced past persecution or has established a well-founded fear of future persecution on account of a protected ground is a refugee within the meaning of the INA and thus is statutorily eligible for asylum. The Zhang case was recently cited with approval by this court in Zhu Zhen Lin versus Mukasey, which is found at 532 F3rd 596, wherein this court agreed with one of the holdings in Zhang that when a child is denied education until payment of a substantial fine, such denial of educational opportunities can amount to persecution. In this case, petitioner put substantial evidence into the record that was not even considered, but which demonstrates that his parents' resistance to the coercive population control policies has, in fact, increased the likelihood that he will be subject to persecution as a result of his own future resistance to China's coercive family planning policy.
Now, is it... you know, of course, we have the past persecution issue and the well-founded fear of future persecution issue. And on the well-founded fear side of things, is it your argument that the evidence would show, if he's returned to China, that he himself would face forcible sterilization?
We believe based on the well-founded fear of future persecution standard, he certainly meets the 10% likelihood that that would occur. And we think it's far greater than 10%. Consider the fact that his parents repeatedly violated the policy at great cost and expense to themselves and their family. They had 6 pregnancies, which is very unusual in China, one of which was tragically terminated at stillborn birth when his mother was fleeing from the population control policy and somehow fell and broke both her legs. Nevertheless, his parents managed to successfully give birth to 5 children, of whom Mr. Chen is the last child, until the committee finally caught up with his mother and forcibly and brutally sterilized her. His father, during this entire time, had to continually be on the run to avoid forcible sterilization himself. His aunt was forcibly sterilized and endured an abortion right before her baby was born. The record shows, and this is the significant part that the BIA did not consider, this family continues to be on the radar of the population control committee in his small village. His sister, his only legally born sister, Zha, gave birth legally to a son, but she was forced to abort her second child because the pregnancy was illegal, and then the Population Control Committee issued an order for sterilization against her husband, who had to flee himself to avoid being sterilized. All of this evidence is in the record. It is plain that this family is on the radar of the Population Control Committee in his town. He is child number 5. The evidence in the record shows that he is now no longer even listed on the back of the hukou. He no longer has an identity card. There is ample evidence in the record, and I don't even think the government disputes this, that the Heihaizi themselves are a marginalized group who don't have access to things like marriage, who can't obtain birth permits to have children. If he is sent back to China, this petitioner will face a Hobson's choice. He will either have to never have children or face a significant likelihood of being forcibly sterilized if he attempts to even have a single child. He's barely out of his teens. He came here when he was 17. He understandably wants to have children, and he has testified as such. All of this evidence is in the record, and it's not in dispute. And in defining the well-founded fear standard, the U.S. Supreme Court has indicated that even a 10% chance of persecution constitutes a reasonable probability such that the applicant has demonstrated a well-founded fear. Persecution in the case law embodies punishment or infliction of suffering or harm, and certainly encompasses being forcibly sterilized. One thing the government seems to be arguing that we have never asked for is that they think we are saying we want a per se rule that everybody who's illegally born, whose parents were forcibly sterilized, is automatically entitled to asylum. That is not what we're saying. We're not saying that the floodgates should be open and everyone who has... is the status of Heihaizi or has sterilized parents should be allowed to apply for asylum in this country. Rather, we're saying in order for a child to demonstrate that a parent's resistance to a coercive population control policy is properly imputed to him, he must adduce evidence demonstrating how their resistance has, in fact, increased the likelihood that China's coercive population control policy will, in fact, be applied to him. And in this case, we've seen that his family's continued resistance has caused the Population Control Committee in his village to be very in tune and watching and to strictly enforce the policy against his sibling and against his family. Certainly being illegally born creates the potential for persecution, as does being a child of parents who vigorously oppose the government's coercive population control policies, but neither of these is dispositive of the question of whether an applicant has demonstrated a well-founded fear of future persecution. We say the BIA should have considered whether petitioner's parents' open and notorious violations of the policy have resulted or will result in strict enforcement of the policy against others in petitioner's family in the future, including petitioner himself. So we also note that the case that the government submitted my time is up. I think I have a minute for rebuttal, and I'll address that in my rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Heise?
Heise.
I like the alleged class involved in this case. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Michael Heise on behalf of the respondent, the Attorney General.
Start you out because you argue that the Attorney General's position is entitled to deference.
Correct, Your Honor.
And I'm wondering, as I earlier noted, whether the new Attorney General is adhering to this position that the spouses of forcibly sterilized persons are not entitled to per se eligibility for asylum. I'm also curious if the new administration would take the position that depriving children of adequate food is a, quote, legitimate economic incentive to families to limit births, end quote. That's at page 31 of the red brief, because I find that position, frankly, shocking.
Your Honor, with respect to both of those questions, I'll address the current administration's status. At this time, the policy of the Office of Immigration Litigation is to defend the decisions and defend the law as it stands today. There's been no indication to me personally that I'm aware of that the Attorney General intends to revisit the extensive evolution that has taken place in this line of cases over the last 20 or even more years, basically culminating in the matter of JS decision, in which is based on the plain statutory language that was enacted with ARERA in 1996, that individuals such as spouses or boyfriends, girlfriends, things like that, of individuals who have been subjected to forced sterilization, forced abortions, things of that nature, that they are no longer entitled to per se refugee status.
But, you know, you guys are taking the glass half empty approach to this. The Attorney General very clearly in that decision said that that was a factor that
Certainly.
Each individual person might be, that one was to look at the record as a whole, and to read the government's briefs in these cases makes it look like you think the former Attorney General Mukasey thought that you were almost ineligible for finding persecution if you were merely a family member.
Definitely
That's
not.
Not the law.
Of course
And
not.
As counsel has made clear, I mean, that's not this petitioner's position.
The plain statutory language, again, is what controls. It
well,
suggests
and
that
why do we care about it? That's not they're making a more holistic argument. And I agree with Judge Rovner's comment about the notion that it's a perfectly fine economic incentive to starve children, to cause people to comply with a policy that violates every human rights covenant that I know of.
This court has held that starvation, extreme hunger, can constitute persecution, and petitioner has done a successful.
It's not a legitimate economic incentive. I mean, your brief had language in it, and I'll say your brief. It was the government's brief.
I mean, you compare
this to Dandridge against Williams.
I know you compare China's policy of denying food and citizenship to children born as high hussy to Maryland's $250 cap on aid to families with dependent children as a legitimate economic incentive to families to limit births. I was wondering if China can deny food, citizenship, and other benefits to children born to Muslims as an incentive for families to be atheists. Or perhaps maybe I should ask whether China can do that without persecuting those children born to religious parents. You know,
this is blurring the line, Your Honor, however, between what is a
you
coercive.
The line in your brief.
With all due respect, Your Honor, there's a this. The government does not endorse coercive family planning policies. That
I hope
flat
not,
out.
Because Congress certainly does.
Of course, and that is exactly what the Attorney General and the Department of Justice and the Office of Immigration and Litigation have sought to uphold is the letter of the law that Congress has set forth. That individuals who are subjected to forced sterilization, forced abortion, or otherwise resisted those acts and would likely face persecution because of it or were persecuted because of it. They are refugees. With respect to whether or not...
So what do you mean when you say at page 32, indeed, in the United States, laws providing similar incentives have been upheld against constitutional challenges, and you're looking at these limitations on food as a legitimate economic incentive to families to limit births. That sounds like you're applauding the Chinese system.
It's one of many examples that can be taken to an extreme. In this country, we have our tax code that treats people differently based on how many children they have. Failure to pay your taxes or claiming too many dependents results in persecution
prosecution. Do that, but I don't know how many children you have, but you get to claim as dependents as many children as you have. Some people come from families with very many children, others no children, and everything in between.
You know, the BIA seems to have taken the position that China can deny citizenship to anyone for any reason and then deny certain government benefits based on lack of citizenship because the government is not taking away rights that a person already had. So tell me this. Can China, for example, deny citizenship to children born in China to Christian parents and then deny the family a food allotment to feed that child? Are there any categories a country may not use to deny citizenship to a person born there to citizen parents, in your view?
This court has consistently held that countries retain the sovereign right to decide who its citizens are, regardless of any appurtenant rights that follow from that. That's the Haile case and the D'Souza case.
And
the facts are quite different in those cases, by the way. And as a matter of international law, children born within the territory of a particular country are, in fact, presumptively citizens of that country. We don't send them out to be, you know, the proverbial man without a country.
This is true. However, countries are not obligated to provide certain rights or certain services, including in this country. There is no constitutional right to education in the United States.
But there certainly is a constitutional right to say not to have a situation where the Christian children get no education and the Muslim children get a complete free education.
Again, that would be an issue of persecution or discrimination. And it's a question of whether or not that discrimination would rise to the level of persecution. And based on the field of issues here, specifically, again, in this country, there is no right to constitutional right to education. The United States Supreme Court has said that it is acceptable for a school to charge a fee to all students regardless of their ability to afford it.
But that's not what was happening here at all. And in fact, if you remember Moore versus East Cleveland, the Supreme Court went so far as to say that there was a constitutional right for a grandmother to have her two grandsons living with her, even though they were merely cousins, not brothers. The court has recognized some fundamental family rights.
You know, here, it's not as if... it's not as if China denied citizenship to his parents because they violated the policy. The Chinese government is denying these benefits. You know, some of us might argue basic human rights, like food, not to the persons deciding to violate the one-child policy, but to the child who has no control whatsoever over the violation. And the BIA is just going along with this.
The critical inquiry here is, and in any of these cases, is that it's a burden of proof. The alien bears the burden of showing either that he suffered past persecution or a well-founded fear of future persecution. And the record evidence in this case does not suggest the Chinese government has ever denied him anything. He asked for a birth certificate. He got it. He asked for an ID card. He got it twice. He lost it once and got it again. He obtained a valid passport, and I use valid with emphasis because he testified that it was a valid passport.
But your argument presumes that Chen bears the burden of showing he cannot relocate.
If he has failed to demonstrate past persecution, and there is the possibility that he can relocate, he bears the burden of proving that he cannot. the burden shifts. If the alien has demonstrated past persecution, it's presumed to be countrywide. Then the government bears the burden of rebutting the presumption that it is countrywide. Further, with respect to Chen's own situation in China, he claimed that he was economically deprived, but in his first opportunity to obtain a job, he had no difficulty doing so.
Yeah, his father had to give away one of his siblings in order to have enough
That's
money.
That's not Chen's own situation, however.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. That's his sister.
Actually, it is his sister.
How many sisters do you have?
My own personal situation is not before the court, Your Honor.
Luckily.
Yes, aren't you?
It's not before the Chinese authorities, actually.
I'm very fortunate to have been born in the United States. Yes, Your Honor. Petitioner has never been beaten, detained, or jailed, or denied specific services on account of his birth status.
Food.
He claims he was denied food. It's, again, nonspecific as to exactly how much hunger he endured. And this court has held that it must be extreme hunger. I can cite the case if you like. It's a TARAF, 495 F3D at 535.
Who was on that panel?
I'm sorry?
Who was on that panel?
I'm not aware, Your Honor. It was a 2007 case, though, so some of your current colleagues. With respect to education, again, this court has said in D'Souza, a government can provide publication to all people, no people, or some people without persecuting them. And specific to this line of cases and any asylum case, an individual must show that he will be singled out for persecution. That's Koval and Chen.
And he has suggested that his family is in the crosshairs.
Interestingly, however, his father has lived in China for 17 years since Chen's birth and has somehow avoided sterilization.
Right, and his testimony is his father has fled from one place to another. We have cases that say if you're living underground, that's not really a sign that you're having a happy existence.
His father, in his affidavit, stated that he was present when Chen's mother was forcibly removed from the home. He didn't fight that. He did not challenge them dragging her out of the house.
What? How?
He himself was not taken away. This is the inquiry, Your Honor. That is the inquiry that is required. You must demonstrate other resistance. It's
you don't
not.
Have
this
to
is getting
take
back
on
into
a bunch of people, you know, who are dragging your wife away. This is an astounding standard.
It's more than mere acquiescence. It must be some other resistance. This is plainly required in INA Section 101A42. Says you must demonstrate other resistance, and allowing your wife to be removed from the home. Having children does not count and qualify as other resistance as well. And again, this court must give deference to the Attorney General's decisions in
matter
of JS.
Only Skidmore deference. If the Attorney General isn't willing to put his name behind it, it seems to me at the most you've got Skidmore.
Yeah.
I don't understand why the Attorney General
itself has regulations that say that decisions by a single board member are not precedential and are not to be relied on in the future. And if the board doesn't want to rely on them, I don't see how the court would have to do anything more than give it Skidmore deference, which is to say whatever it seems to deserve.
The court must afford Chevron as well as Brand X deference to Matter of JS.
If you give, and we're happy to do that because Matter of JS isn't even on the table. They've disclaimed reliance on any per se rule. Happy to give deference to that.
The ultimate point, however, is that possession of an imputed political opinion is not the end of the inquiry. One must still demonstrate persecution on account of it.
Sure.
There still must be a logical result that follows. Again, Chen has never been denied a birth certificate. He was given an identification card. He was able to obtain a valid passport. All of these do not suggest and tend to an inference, as this court has suggested in DeBrota, that these types of acts suggest that future persecution is unlikely. That's 195 F3D 970, a 1999 case from this court. And I submit that the petitioner has failed to meet his burden of proof. And for these reasons, the court should deny his petition for review. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Heiss. You're courageous to come in here with that brief. Yes.
I just have 1 minute to make a few points. I think that this court recognizes that, based on the questions I heard, that the BIA failed to look at the record evidence as a whole, and that is what they are required to do. As far as deference, the BIA said that they don't have to follow the Ninth or Second Circuit, And because petitioner cites no cases from the Seventh Circuit, they basically predicted that you would not follow the Ninth or Second Circuit. And as such, I think that is a question of law subject to de novo review by this court. As far as the passport goes, in fact, it's the HUCO that gives you the right to relocate in the United in the PRC. It is not a passport. There is a question as to whether the passport was actually valid. He had to spend $72,000 to leave the country to actually exercise a right to travel. And then he was instructed by the snakeheads to tear up the passport with other false documents. So as far as being able to get a passport he could actually use to travel, the evidence does not show that. But I wanted to tell you, you had asked where there is in the record discussion about Haizia not being able to marry. That would be AR-225. And for discussion of HUCO and the rights that it provides, see AR-219. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thanks to all counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.